ready when council are ready. Mr. Thomas.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mr. Chief Judge and members of the court, my name is Norman Thomas, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Michael Thomas Terlecki. I did expect my co-counsel today. I fear she's out on Interstate 95 with a lot of other people. Ms. LaVonda.
A lot of us were there this morning.
Yes, sir. I would like to reserve 5 minutes as my time.
Yes, sir, 5 minutes.
Rebuttal. In this case, Mr. Terlecki, the appellant, challenges the conviction that he received in the Fredericksburg Circuit Court a year ago in May of 2014 was his trial. July 14th of 2014 was the final order in the case. And he asserts to this court that it should be reversed and the indictment dismissed, that his conviction does not rest upon sufficient evidence. And he asserts that the Commonwealth failed to introduce sufficient evidence to establish the actual person issue, or what is deemed by the statute to be an identifiable minor in the elemental definition of what constitutes child pornography, that the constructive possession the Commonwealth urges on the court was not proved by sufficient evidence.
Mr. Thomas, can I ask you on that?
Yes.
His girlfriend, Ms. Humphrey's former girlfriend, says, you know, I've got much younger sisters, and I'm very aware of what, you know, girls look like at certain ages as they're growing up, including prepubescent on through puberty. And the pictures I saw in there were clearly of real people. And when he's talking, when your client's being interviewed by Detective Reyes, did I pronounce Reyes?
Reyes, yes, sir.
Correctly. When he's talking to Detective Reyes, he seems to refer to them as individuals or persons or girls, or he doesn't use a pronoun that would indicate it's an image or an it or a thing or a computer-generated image or a virtual image. It seems to be an indication that he thinks they are real individuals. How do you respond to that?
There's a lot there. I will begin this way. When she was talking about her sisters, if you look at the specific question, the prosecutor asked her ages. It was a response directly to ages. But more broadly, the Commonwealth urges here that common usage is good enough to say children or little girls or whatever it may be. Mr. Terlecki never made an admission of any kind about any of the images that Humphreys described. That goes to possession and to the actual person issue. But the most important response that I can give to you on that question is this. Our General Assembly has said how you prove it. They've said it's got to be an identifiable minor who is recognizable as an actual person by face, likeness, or other distinguishing characteristic such as a birthmark or other recognizable feature. They have taken this out of the realm of common usage. As Detective Reyes said to Mr. Terlecki during his interrogation of him, child pornography means different things to different people. So common usage doesn't help the Commonwealth here. Their evidence must reach the standard of an identifiable minor. That's not minor. That's identifiable.
They don't have to actually say who the minor is by name, do they?
No. The statute itself, in fact, part of the definition of identifiable minor says you don't have to prove that. But there must be a basis given, and that's what the General Assembly has required. There must be a basis, a recognizable feature, a distinguishing characteristic, recognizable as an actual person by something. And there's nothing here for that. Ms. Humphrey's high watermark was that they looked human from what I could tell. But what's missing there, and in every other follow-up to that, and the prosecutor suffered greatly from a case that was aged out. It was 10 months before she reported it. It was 21 months after her single time looking at single images that this trial took place. So it's no wonder they called it the stuff and it, without getting specific.
But didn't they also use the feminine pronoun of she or her at some point, not just it?
That takes us that the depictions were likely of females. But it doesn't tell us what recognizable feature. In other words, the General Assembly has said in creating this definition, tell us why. You just have to tell us a bit of why you say. Why are they recognizable? And there's a reason they've done that. And in fact, Your Honor, I submit to the court that Virginia has taken it a little bit beyond some of the federal statutes and some of the statutes from the other states by creating a definition that we can all see and that requires certain evidence to be given to meet it. Beyond a reasonable doubt, we must meet it to convict people. And that is to gain a reliability on the convictions that occur in Virginia for possession of child pornography. A felony conviction is quite a stigma, and on top of that is the sex offender registration. It's a life sentence all its own. And our General Assembly has done a good thing by creating some specificity to this and a level of, it's not so much a hurdle, but a level of evidentiary standard which is not in this record. To say they looked human from what I could tell. They look like photographs, not cartoons or likenesses.
But there are cases that were cited in the, I'm sure it was in the Commonwealth's brief now, but there were cases cited where that's been sufficient, that they're identifiable as human beings. Isn't that all that's required?
No, it is not all that's required. They must be recognizable as actual persons by something. And here, all she says is, they looked like humans. She said it looked like photographs. But that just tells us a little bit about the image. It doesn't tell us about the subjects depicted in the image. And without the images, and a lot of the cases that we've cited bear on the fact that the images are the best evidence. And in fact, State v. Tooley, the Ohio Supreme Court case that we cited, clearly indicates, as does U.S. v. Bynum, the Fourth Circuit case that we cited, that the pictures are always going to be best and that we're going to let our fact finders make their mind up from that. But we don't have those here.
Does the Fourth Circuit say in Bynum that you have to have the pictures presented in order to get a conviction?
No. Its essential holding is that if you have the pictures, you don't have to have expert testimony. And of course here we don't have expert testimony. We don't have any idea of the identity of depictions of subject. We don't have anything that tells us about the creator or the one that created or made these images. And we don't have anything that tells us why, what is the recognizable feature by which she was in effect opining that they were human or that they looked human from what she could tell. That was the high watermark.
Because we don't have to, as you say, we don't have to have the witness say, well, I know who that child is.
No.
And she doesn't even have to say, you know, I know them, or I know, from, I've seen this girl before, right? But here she says, I've got sisters who are much younger than I am, 10 years and more younger. So I'm very familiar with prepubescent girls and girls who, after they've just entered puberty. So I can look at their features and tell these are real children, right? Or they appear to be real to me or something like that.
Again, respectfully, the question she was answering was, what are their ages? And I would ask the court to compare 18.2.371.1:1F, which makes the rebuttable presumption with respect to age, and compare that with A, with the specificity of the definitions that go into what is child pornography of 18.2.371.1A. And you'll see that it's easy to prove age. We even have a rebuttable presumption we'll give you there, which the court found constitutional in Freeman v. Commonwealth. No such thing for actual persons, because the U.S. Supreme Court said you have to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt, and Virginia has set the standard for how that's done. I know I'm in my rebuttal time. I'd like to say one thing before I sit down about the constructive possession. One of the key cases here is the Chapman case, which Your Honor authored. And I would ask the court, and I'll say more on rebuttal. I'm sure I'll get my chance. But from the beginning to the end of that case, the court looked at what were all of the circumstances to show that the defendant lived by himself, had exclusive access to the computer, made statements that related to the images, and compare this case in your minds as you listen to the arguments that follow. He never said anything, the appellant here never said anything about the images that Humphreys described, ever. He didn't have exclusive access to the computer. He loaned it to his girlfriend, and that's how all this got started. He had roommates the entire time. So we're looking at the Cromer standard, where someone downloaded images.
But in that questioning that was recorded, he conceded that he had the recordings, that he had viewed the recordings, that they were stimulating to him, but that that was behind him and he had gotten rid of the computer. Isn't that enough for possession?
No. There are four computers discussed in that statement. An old desktop, an old laptop, the one he had when Ms. Humphreys was his girlfriend, and the new one. They spanned from the time he was 10 or 11 until he was 25. He talked about nudes, non-nudes, some that clearly would have possibly been child pornography if we had identifiable minors proven, but never the ones about her. It was much more general. If I may, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Chandeville?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, good morning. My name is Chris Chandeville. I represent the Commonwealth in this appeal. Terlecki is coming into court this morning and essentially asking this court to create a new rule for child pornography cases, a rule that's not recognized in any other jurisdiction. And that rule would state that so long as you're able to destroy all evidence of your child pornography before the investigators find it, doesn't matter how many witnesses see you using that child pornography and possessing that child pornography, it doesn't matter how many statements you make admitting that you used and possess child pornography, so long as you can destroy it before the investigators find it, the Commonwealth of Virginia will hold as a matter of law that you cannot be convicted for possessing that child pornography.
Well, but going the next step, what does this statute mean then when it requires that it be of an actual person identified by the person's face, likeness, or other distinguishing characteristics such as a unique birthmark, etc., for an actual identity of an identifiable minor? What does all that language mean?
So there are, I think, two issues that the counsel's primarily raised here on appeal, and I'll distinguish between the two and address your question.
Yes, yes.
Because the distinction is important in that one of the arguments was made at trial, but the other argument was not made at trial. So the argument that was made at trial is that you need the pictures or an expert to testify, or you need a witness who personally knew the victims in the photographs to testify in order to get a conviction. You cannot rely merely upon lay witness testimony that I was convinced these were real people, which is what we had here. That was the argument at trial. The argument on appeal, I think that argument is still being made, but there's a secondary argument, which is that Ms. Humphrey's testimony was deficient because she never testified specifically to these distinguishing characteristics. So she never said she saw a birthmark. She never said she saw the faces. She never said that any of these other distinguishing characteristics that are mentioned in the statute. That argument was not made at any point at the trial level. The argument was all about whether you could get a conviction based solely on lay witness testimony. So I'd argue, first of all, that this argument about distinguishing characteristics and whether her testimony was sufficient was not preserved and thus is not before the court. And the reason why that's important is because the reason for Rule 5A18 is so that the counsel has to make the argument to the trial court. The trial court can address the argument. The trial court can examine the evidence in the way that he is best positioned to do and make factual findings to support his ultimate conclusion. In this case, the trial court did not have the opportunity to do that because that argument wasn't made. I'll get to the merits, though, and just in case, because I know that question is coming next.
Yes, thank you.
And if the court had had that opportunity, I think the trial court would have made the factual finding based on Ms. Humphrey's testimony and based on Mr. Terlecki's admissions that the evidence was sufficient to prove that these minors were recognizable as actual persons by distinguishing characteristics.
And what distinguishing characteristics would that ruling have been?
Right. So I'll cite to you a couple places for you in the record. First of all, on page 15 of the appendix, and I'll just go ahead and turn there and read you exactly what her testimony was. And it starts on page 14. She says there was one file in particular, though, that involved minors who were naked or otherwise engaged in some form of sexual activity, not with a partner, but for the camera. So from that evidence, the trial court could have reasonably inferred that if the minors look like they're engaged in activity for the camera, that she could see their faces. Because it's hard to just, judging by what their bodies, if the shot is just focused on the bodies, how can you tell they're doing it for the camera? So I think that is evidence that she could...
Are you saying then that if the faces were not visible, that that would not be sufficient under the statute?
If the faces were not visible, it wouldn't be sufficient under that one narrow descriptor in the statute.
Right.
But of course, the statute goes on to also say other distinguishing... basically any distinguishing characteristics. And the legislature included the word likeness in there. And I would submit that the word likeness is a very broad term, which could be read to include just the general appearance of the children.
So in order to sustain the conviction, we would need to infer that Ms. Humphrey's testimony that she recognized children posing for the camera, that that's enough for us to infer that their faces were visible to her?
That's part of what I think there is in the evidence that the court could have relied upon. I don't think that's all the evidence. I can give you some more places and some additional arguments from the record. I think additionally, perhaps the strongest evidence is the confidence with which Ms. Humphreys and Mr. Terlecki asserted the ages of these children and the fact that these children were real children. So if it had been the case that there were no distinguishing characteristics visible in any of these pictures, so in other words, all the pictures were focused on one part of these children's bodies and that's all that the viewer could see, I would argue that's a reasonable inference that Ms. Humphreys would not have been able to testify that it was very obvious to her that these were prepubescent children, that they did not appear to be computer generated in any way, they looked like real people, that they were clear photographs. Her confidence in being able to make that assessment leads to the permissible inference from the trial court that she was able to determine that these were actual people, actual persons, based on her assessment of distinguishing characteristics as the statute requires. I would submit that the statute is not the legislature's attempt to limit how a fact finder can reach the conclusion that these are actual persons. I would submit that it's an attempt to explain how anyone makes an assessment that people depicted in images are real people. You look for distinguishing characteristics. You look for, does this look like a picture of someone that the person who knows this individual can look at the picture and say, yes, that's my daughter, or yes, that's me.
In most cases, you're going to have a picture that includes one's face.
I don't think it requires one's face because the word likeness is in there. It would be easiest if you had testimony, yes, I saw all of their faces, and I could tell that these were identifiable people, that we could pick them out of a crowd.
And the word face
doesn't, required.
The word face doesn't even appear in this record, does it? Nobody testified that they remember seeing faces.
Correct. There was not questioning about faces. And again, I would submit to you that part of the reason why there's no testimony or questioning about whether they could see faces is because everyone from Ms. Humphreys, as she testified, as she talked to Terlecki, from Terlecki as he talked to Detective Reyes, from Detective Reyes as he had that conversation with Terlecki, everyone knew, was under the impression that these were real children we're talking about.
Well, what were the recognizable features? I mean, the statute says birthmark or other recognizable features. So what are the recognizable features that were the basis for the conviction?
Right, so, and again, I would admit that there was no questioning of the witness specifically to what were the recognizable features that you saw. I think part of the reason for the fact that there's not a lot of questioning and there's not a lot of arguing and there are no factual findings as to what would have supported that inference is that, again, that argument was not made at the trial level. The argument was solely as to whether you could get a conviction without the pictures themselves, solely relying on lay witness testimony. And I think based on Nolan and the other cases that are cited on brief, it's clear based on the reasoning of those cases that you should be able to get a conviction just based on lay witness testimony. So I'll allow that we would have a better record if the arguments had been made, if the court had had the opportunity to make factual findings. I do think the court, again, if the evidence is sufficient to prove identifiable minor based on distinguishing characteristics, because I think there are places in the record. The fact that these children were posing for the camera, that leads to the permissible inference is that she could see their faces. The fact that they were as confident as they were that these were real children, these were not CGI, all those lead to the inferences that her determination that they were actual persons was based on distinguishing characteristics.
How do you respond to Mr. Thomas's point that when she was questioned, she said, "They looked human from what I could tell." Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't a cartoon or a likeness. It looked like photographs to me.
Right.
And of course, she does go on, as you say, to talk about, you know, I have young sisters who are much younger than I am. I know what they look like prepubescent and into puberty at the various developmental stages. But, I mean, they looked human from what I could tell. I mean, it wasn't a cartoon or a likeness. It looked like photographs to me. That doesn't sound really certain.
Well, that's just page 33 of the appendix, and that is her response to cross-examination. And I think that's worth noting because the question on cross was a leading question attempting to get her to admit that she really doesn't know whether they're CGI or not. The question specifically... or perhaps page 35. Yes, page 35. Question on cross. Whether the people in them are really people or CGI or some sort of hyper-technology, you don't know that, do you? And her response was, they looked human from what I could tell. I mean, it wasn't a cartoon or a likeness. It looked like photographs to me. So that's her response to cross-examination. Later when she's on redirect, pages 39 through 40, she's even less equivocal. I would argue that was not equivocal. That was a response to cross-examination. She's holding her ground. And certainly in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, we're entitled to that reading of the record. On page 39, she's asked on direct at the bottom of the page, did they appear to be computer-generated in any way? Answer, no. Question, they appeared to be real people? Answer, yes. Opposing counsel has argued on brief that that's equivocal. I would argue that there's nothing equivocal about her statements there and her testimony there.
But it also sounds like at trial then, the trial court was certainly aware that whether these were computer-generated images or not was one of the issues that was being tried.
Whether or not it was sufficient to rely on lay witness testimony to prove that they were actual persons is the argument that was made. The argument about distinguishing characteristics, so if defense counsel at trial had argued, you cannot rely on Ms. Humphrey's testimony because she never testified about a birthmark. She never testified about faces. She never testified about all these things. The closest she comes is page 92 through 94 of the record. She reads from the statute. But even on pages 92 through 94 of the record, she gets back to her main arguments, which is not that Humphreys' testimony was deficient for failing to talk about distinguishing characteristics. The argument is that the evidence was insufficient because you didn't have an expert. The argument was that the evidence was insufficient because Ms. Humphreys didn't personally know the victim. The argument was that the evidence was insufficient because he didn't have the pictures themselves. So I would submit that this argument about distinguishing characteristics, which is really being raised for the first time on appeal, it was not extensively developed on brief. It's just frankly not before the court. And that's why the court is without the benefit of the fact findings that the trial court would have been allowed to make. And I would submit permissible inferences from the evidence that there were distinguishing characteristics here.
But the burden is on the Commonwealth to prove that. That's one of the elements listed in the statute, to prove that it's an actual person by a person's face, likeness, or other distinguishing characteristics, etc.
Correct, Your Honor. And the burden is always on the Commonwealth to prove every element of a crime. However, we still do have Rule 5A18 for a reason. And if an argument as to one of the elements is not made below, then it can't be raised for the first time on appeal. And again, I assert that if it had been raised, there would have been fact-finding and that the inferences would have been permissible, that she made her assessment that these were actual persons based on her assessment of the pictures, which would have included distinguishing characteristics, including faces as to the pictures where they were performing for the camera. I'll also add that he admitted that he was looking at pictures of little girls performing oral sex on men, which would also seem to allow for the inference that those pictures were pictures of little girls' faces performing oral sex on men. And so from that, those are distinguishing characteristics, which would allow him to make the assessment that he made that these were little girls. He never asserted, I'm looking at pictures of what appear to be little girls. I think that's the way it's phrased on brief, that he asserted what he perceived to be as little girls. He said, these are little girls. He was asked, you're looking at little children performing sex acts. Yes, that's what I'm looking at. So there is no equivocation in his assessment that these were little girls with distinguishing characteristics. Reasonably flows from the inference that he could see their faces in those pictures as well. And of course, a lot of the argument is that, well, he made admissions and he made confessions. He told as to the knowing possession issue, he admitted to Humphreys that he used the pictures she found for sexual gratification. He promised, I won't download any more pictures of that nature, which implies that he had downloaded those pictures that she found. He told her how he had acquired the pictures that she found. So to assert that because on this record we don't have a full detailed explanation of that and description of that conversation, we don't have him saying, yes, you know, that picture, that was mine. Yes, that picture, that was mine. That picture, that was mine. That the trial court can infer that if she confronts him about the pictures she testified she found and he admits to using those pictures and possessing them, the trial court can infer those are the same pictures. So those admissions, those confessions, all match up. The same with the statements he made about the pictures of the girls performing oral sex. Those would also corroborate the earlier testimony that these are actual persons in these pictures. There are identifiable minors based on distinguishing characteristics.
The burden is just to follow up on Judge Huff's question. The burden is not on him, what the Supreme Court said in Ashcroft, is it to show somehow that these are virtual images. The burden is still on the Commonwealth to show that these are real children.
Right? Correct, Your Honor. And I would submit to you, based on the Supreme Court's opinion in Ashcroft, the court provided a bit of a test that courts can use going forward to determine, have we yet gotten to the point where there's no way for a common person to distinguish between these images. And the court said, when we get to that point where virtual images are indistinguishable from real images, the real images are going to be driven from the market. That's because pornographers aren't going to take the risk that if something that's legal and perfectly discernible...
You'll wrap it up, please.
Sure. Because the pornographers are not as likely to take that risk. We've not yet gotten to that point. There was no expert testimony that we've gotten to that point. And so I would submit that while the burden's on the Commonwealth, when the Commonwealth is still relying upon common sense that lay people can make this determination, the burden shifts to disprove that common sense to the defendant. And no attempt to do that was done here. So for all these reasons, we would ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Thomas, that phrase in the statute is in the alternative, an actual person by a person's face, likeness, or other distinguishing characteristic. When Ms. Humphreys says it's a photograph, isn't that a likeness? And then the oral sex example, isn't that going to be, by definition, a person's face, distinguishable as a child by face?
We submit not. It has to be a recognizable feature. It has to be a characteristic, a distinguishing characteristic. Just to say people, or just to say children, or just to say little girls, it doesn't take you there. It doesn't give the basis of the conclusion, and that's what the statutory definition is looking for. Perhaps doesn't have to be a lot, but it can't be guesswork. It has to be something that tells the basis of the conclusion. The best evidence being the images, of course, or recognizing who it was from an exploited child database, or something of that nature. But here, as sincere as she was, it's not that she was lying. It's that it didn't go far enough. It didn't meet the definition, and that's the point. And I want to say something else. As a professional, submit that the Commonwealth is here taking some liberties with the facts. Mr. Terlecki never said the word downloaded to anyone. I urge the court to look in the record on that. Never said real people to anyone. But also, I want to submit that Ms. Graham-Williams, on page after page after page, and let's remember, the Commonwealth's evidence was over and done before one word of argument was ever made. But over and over, she talks about insufficient evidence on the identifiable minor element of the offense. Pages 63 and 64, 70 and 71, 72, especially 76, 80, 93, 94, 107, 122, 123, 131, and 132. Those were all argument references to the actual person issue. And throughout that time, she made reference, yes, to actual person issue and to identifiable minor standard in the statute, all of which was in the context of meeting the constitutional standard set forth in Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition. The Commonwealth has been rather quick to say somebody forgot something or waived something, and if you look at the briefs, and especially our reply brief, you'll see our response to that. How do they miss these things, is our response. This issue was preserved, and there's no new rule here. What Mr. Terlecki is asking is to follow the rule here. The Commonwealth cannot countermand the General Assembly. It cannot render meaningless any word of the statute, and it cannot render superfluous the modifier of identifiable when we talk about identifiable minors. And that's the key. Why? And the court, I know, is working on and laboring on this record on that issue because it's not there. And on these issues of possession, I want to just respond in what time I have left, absent other questions.
You're in negative time now. So
right. I forgot I was on the other side of the red light.
I'll give you a moment to...
I won't do that. Okay. I'll just ask this. On behalf of Mr. Terlecki, he asks that you reverse this conviction and that you dismiss this indictment, because the evidence was insufficient on multiple grounds. Thank you.
Thank you. We will come down and greet counsel, and at that